Big news in AI GPUs next on Tech Stack. Thank you for joining this edition of Tech Stack. I'm joined today by my esteemed colleagues, Mark Vina at Smart Tech, Dave Altavella at Hot Tech, Marco Cipetta at Hot Tech, and Francis Sadeco, along with myself from Tyrius Research. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me. It's a busy, busy time in the industry. We have so many things going on. There were 7 events that I counted last week. It was crazy. But even outside those events, there were some big news that came up. So let's kind of dive right in. You know, the first thing, you know, we're finally seeing production of some of the latest AI GPUs in Arizona on site here in the States. Dave, you got any comments on that?
You know, it's an interesting release for sure. I guess it marks the really the onshoring of critical technology and infrastructure here in the U.S. for AI chips with TSMC's Arizona fab, NVIDIA launching their first wafer out of the fab. I think there's, you know, it's a great milestone for wafer manufacturing here in the U.S., for chip manufacturing in the U.S., but there are lots of nuances and wrinkles to this that we should unpack a little bit. I think, you know, it certainly starts the chip process, the chip building process, but there's other parts of the equation like packaging that still get done overseas. And so, you know, there's puts and takes here for sure, but it's a great first step. I will say that.
Mark, you know, this is big. We're seeing 4-nanometer production of Blackwell in the TSMC fab in Arizona, but it's 4-nanometer. You know, what's this mean for, you know, TSMC, for NVIDIA, and for the rest of the industry if it's not on the latest process node?
Well, from my perspective, I mean, I think Dave hit the nail on the head. This is the first step in a long journey. This is not, you know, declare victory and run away. I mean, there's still a considerable path they have got to go down because all the pieces still are not there yet. And I agree with you, you know, 4-nanometer is kind of okay from a step standpoint. But to me, the overall messaging of this is that, you know, this is a successful implementation in America, in the United States, in Arizona. And I think that's a good thing. Again, it's not going to be like the United States reclaims 85% of the chip manufacturing away from Taiwan. But I think it's a good step. It's a necessary step. And, you know, I think Dave said it very, very nicely. I think you have to assess it for what it is, but it's a necessary first step. So I think from that perspective, you know, I'm glad to see this.
Marco, you were with me at the ITT, Intel Tech Tour, just a few weeks ago, where we toured one of the most advanced fabs in the world, you know, at 18A. What do you want to see out of TSMC, you know, going forward? Is this, you know, how important is this step and what do they need to do next?
I think super important. So just a bit of nuance with this particular announcement. Jensen, along with TSMC, showed off the first Blackwell wafer out of TSMC's Arizona fab. Not that they're in mass production of Blackwell chips. There's nuance there, but this is absolutely key for bringing leading edge semiconductor manufacturing back to the U.S. I made the argument in my coverage of the ITT event that you could say that Intel is producing the most advanced transistors in the world at the moment at their fab in Arizona. You know, it's not the smallest features in terms of nanometer with those wafers, but you have gate all around transistors, you have backside power via, so it's a very advanced process. And I think this announcement from NVIDIA and TSMC shows that, you know, you can't just copy and paste the design for a new fab. You know, you don't just download the files and print out your chips. So there was significant work that was done between NVIDIA and TSMC to get this wafer out of that fab. And I think it lays the groundwork for more advanced manufacturing moving forward when TSMC's more advanced fabs are done in the US.
Well, to that point, TSMC even pretty much is building its own little town around there for a lot of the talent that they're bringing over from Taiwan to actually work at this facility and bring up this facility. So it's going to be interesting. And just a note, you know, this is there's two fabs going in, one packaging facility going in, and they've got a commitment for even more beyond that. So as my fellow desert rat, the man in Vegas.
Wow.
What do you think about all this going into one location? I mean, let's face it, the Intel and TSMC fabs are only about 45, 50 miles apart. It's all going into Phoenix.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a reason for that, right? I mean, whenever you're looking at fabs like this, you need to understand what the municipality is able to provide in terms of cooling, power, and so forth. I'm sure, and Phoenix has been pretty aggressive too with things like tax breaks and things like that because of the influx of talent that would get brought in. And I think you touched on this a little bit, Jim, just right now. This is significant because they're not going to stop here. They are going to continue to go towards the next generation of chips and so forth. And the other thing to keep in mind is whenever you start to try to close the gap on some a capability like this, to Mark's point, you're not going to try to overnight replace, you know, be the 85% or even 40 or 50% leader of the market. What you try to do is identify the key areas where it's extremely strategic. And in this case, it's AI. And the point of this is to onshore back key capabilities for the US to be able to retain, maintain, and accelerate leadership in key areas. And that area is AI. And that's what this allows us to do. Even though it is 4 nanometer, it lets the US get on Blackwell and then build from there. So I think this is an extremely important development.
Well, gentlemen, as the one of us that actually attended the OCP Global Summit last week, I will tell you there's a lot of excitement about not just the GB200, but the GB300. Matter of fact, I made the comment that they may have to rename that show because it was all about pretty much the MGX platform and the GB300. Everyone was showing that off. Other than the one Helios, AMD Helios system, pretty much everyone was focused on, you know, where the NVIDIA product line and where it's going. And a lot of excitement. I mean, I've got some questions lately about the bring up of GB300, but everyone seems excited about it. Anybody else hearing anything different? I mean, this could support the demand that appears to be out there.
I'll toss in sort of a, I don't want to say an antagonistic view, but maybe a contrarian view that I think of when I think of this situation and this opportunity for the U.S. It's really exciting for sure. Getting some of these critical, very powerful AI silicon solutions here built onshore in the U.S. But it's just the step. And by that, I mean, it's still TSMC. Let's face it, not a US-based chip manufacturer. They are a Taiwanese chip company. Should, for example, the geopolitical landscape escalate such that China decides to invade Taiwan, there may be broad-reaching impact even here in the US for that facility. So I would like to see someday our friends at, let's say, Intel, for example, other chip, US-based chip foundry solutions brought into the mix for this as well. Certainly TSMC here in the US and Arizona and creating jobs in the US is a wonderful thing, but it's just the beginning and we got to do more.
But I think Dave, that's the whole point, right? That's what I like about this move by NVIDIA and also TSMC is, you know, we heard it earlier, we have an influx of brain power that's coming in from Taiwan. And in a situation like you describe, even though politically it's connected, geographically it's isolated. And the fact that we have this capability onshore here is a big difference from having everything be isolated in Taiwan. I mean, even a few years ago, I think you remember there was some major earthquakes in that region that really affected the supply chain moving forward. So that geographic isolation, I think helps a lot getting it out here to the US. Plus the know-how that's getting transferred, hopefully to local engineers that are getting trained up by that initial influx. So
right.
Yeah, all right now we're in a vulnerable state, but this is the beginning of how you correct that vulnerability.
Amen.
Yeah, yeah. But let me jump in for a second though, because I, you know, Dave, I'm really glad you brought that up, that point up, because the reality is that should this bad scenario happen and you get Taiwan gets invaded, there will be an implication. Now, I agree with what Francis is saying, and that there is a lot of work going on in the background to make sure that intellectual resources are isolated and siloed in Arizona to minimize the impact of that. But I think we all would be we would be a bit Pollyanna-ish if we really believe that there wouldn't be some type of impact. So I think that's really the point. Well, and I think Dave, that's a very, very good one.
And you have to remember, as Marco said, this is a first step. You know, they're not in full production yet. And once again, they're going to have multiple fabs. They're going to be putting in packaging, just like Intel. Intel's got their fabs in Arizona that are going to be doing volume production. They've got their advanced packaging over in just north of Albuquerque in Rio Rancho for advanced packaging. So it is a step in the right direction, I think, at least from building up that capacity here in the U.S. And
if memory serves, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Jim. If memory serves, I believe TSMC's commitment was $100 billion and ultimately six fabs coming. And the third fab should be online before the decade's end. So within the next 5 years, you know, $100 billion investment, three fabs in Arizona. That's going to be some awesome
packaging
too, like
and packaging.
To train folks in the U.S. to have these jobs it's going to be huge moving forward like this.
Yeah.
And, you know, the biggest vote of confidence possible. I think Apple and NVIDIA, like the two of the biggest customers, are ready for for TSMC in their Arizona fab. So,
yeah,
that's a huge vote of confidence.
Okay.
It's huge. I still want more U.S.-based companies building fabs, though. That's all I'm saying.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And let's face it, it's a great investment. Once you put in a fab, it's going to be running 24/7 for as long as they possibly can. You don't shut those things down. So unless you're going to be retooling. So it's a great investment for the U.S. And I think this is a good step going forward. So based on that, you know, as Francis mentioned, a lot of this is being driven by AI. And, you know, we just had a huge announcement. That's a big benefit. We've had announcements on both sides of the coin for NVIDIA and AMD, but AMD just really secured a huge win with 50,000 GPUs for Oracle. And Francis, you had some comments on that one.
Well, it was just interesting because we know, for example, one of the key things here, everybody is typically focused on, oh, the big XPU, how many GPUs, all that stuff, you know, how much processing power. But when I was reading through the announcement, what was interesting is the scale up connectivity that's being used. And you know, this is typically something that we bring up because it's not just about the processing capability, right? You got power, you've got cooling, but the other bit is the networking, which is the lifeblood really of these you know, uber scale capabilities. And the interesting thing about this was AMD didn't actually say UA link. It said low latency, low power RDMA based networking, which is ultimately UA link, but I just thought it was interesting that they didn't, you know, use kind of the branding that is typically that you would typically use in this kind of situation. So maybe that's a harbinger of where they're going with UALink, especially with some of the latest developments around the NVLink ecosystem that have just come out. But the other one that I would say also is this was an extremely strategic development for AMD because it shows really the fruits of the ZT acquisition. They would not have been able to do this without that acquisition. Yeah. And I like it when companies do moves like that and then follow up with actual real, you know, tangible output, which this one is with the Oracle partnership. So those are just kind of my two big takeaways from this.
Mm-hmm. Mark, any other comments on that?
Well, I think this is just proof positive that AMD is really entered into the big time. I mean, when again, I tend to look at things like this in terms of like 10-year buckets, and where AMD is today versus where AMD was 10 or 15 years ago. And you got to give Lisa Su a lot of credit. And, you know, for Oracle to partner with AMD on such a complex deal that does leverage the ZDE acquisition, which I agree that this would not have happened if that had that not happened. You know, it really catapults AMD into the big time. And I think the other thing from a macro marketplace standpoint, now there's a meaningful alternative to the NVIDIA ecosystem in terms of AI accelerators. So I think that's a good thing. But I just look at things, you know, it's, you know, kind of like looking at a baseball team that was in last place for the last 5 years. And, you know, in a very short period of time, they're in first place and they're in the World Series. Now, who could that be?
An amazing part of that was they were actually a bit late to the market. So seeing AMD really, you know, capture some of these design wins, you know, and we also saw the partnership announcement with Oracle last week, where they're going to be, or 2 weeks ago, I guess now, where they're going to be talking about, you know, investing or providing OpenAI with GPUs and also getting investment in OpenAI through AMD stock. Marco, any comments?
Yeah, I think, you know, specifically these are MI450s. I'm not sure if you guys had mentioned that Oracle has committed to. And I think AMD has actually said lots of really interesting things for MI450. There's not a ton of hard specs out there, speeds and feeds that we can talk about. But I was reading an interview from with Forrest Norrod, and I'm forgetting his title at AMD. But he said the MI450 is going to be AMD's Milan moment for their Instinct GPUs, where they start to grab share, and says it's a no asterisk solution, and they're expecting to lead in inference, in training, and in reinforcement learning. And the other thing he said was that there's, you know, co-optimizing the software and the silicon together for this launch. So those are like three really important things that AMD has already put out there about MI450. And I think it's shaping up to be such a strong product that, you know, Oracle's ready to get in there early and make sure that they get their allotment right out of the gate.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, but they're not shipping the MI400 yet, are they?
No, they're at MI350 currently. And but I think the key takeaway for me that Francis, you hit the nail on the head, is the culmination of the acquisition of ZT System. It was a critical building block that they needed in the equation to deliver a full rack scale solution for customers. I actually had a chance to meet with Forrest Norrod. I think you guys may have been on the call as well. Some of you anyways, and the executive vice president at AMD of Data Center Infrastructure Group. He actually specifically said it's the Helios rack, which was designed in conjunction with ZT system engineers and architects. And I think that's Oracle deal, that 50,000 GPU installation Oracle deal for MI450 in 2026 is a complete validation that customers are confident in their ability to deliver a full rack scale solution like NVIDIA does. So yes, absolutely. As Mark alluded to earlier, this is a big proof point that we now have a viable competitive platform rack scale alternative to NVIDIA's ecosystem, to, you know, CUDA and all of its you know, serious traction and gravitas in the marketplace for AI. They are the 800-pound gorilla. And so, you know, it's a big deal. On the subject of MI450, I'm not sure if this has all been confirmed, but there's been you know, information out there. This is a big honking TSMC 2-nanometer GPU. I'm reading specs of like 432 gigs of HBM4 memory per GPU and around 9.6 terabytes of bandwidth, memory bandwidth per GPU. So it's going to be no joke. And yeah, the comments from Forrest Norrod underscore confidence there versus their competitor NVIDIA. So yeah, pretty exciting, I guess.
Well, as I said, just seeing the Helios system, it's a beast. It is a beast of a system. And there's a lot of interest in it. It was attracting a huge crowd at OCP. It was hard to actually get pictures of it because there was such a crowd around the system. But it is impressive. And to your point, all your points, you know, we are definitely entering a time where we're seeing AMD be more competitive, especially on that rack level. So I got to ask you guys, is this now a two-horse race, or do you think any of the other guys have potential here? Mark, what do you think?
Well, I would say right off the bat, the one thing we have to be really clear about is that AMD, from a brand standpoint, from a strategic vision standpoint, and they have always been the cost alternative, the affordable cost alternative. And there's no reason not to believe that they're going to apply this as they get more aggressive in the data center. They will always be a great affordable cost alternative. And now we're talking about big costs at an aggregate level, but the reality is that not only will they be a great compare against what NVIDIA is doing with their ecosystem, they will do it at a very cost competitive nature with highly competitive technology. So I think that creates, you know, you could argue that it's kind of a two horse race, and AMD now does have credibility. That's not to say that a third or fourth player could get into the mix, but it becomes increasingly hard because all of a sudden, what's the value prop? Is it even lower costs? Is it performance that maybe may not be bleeding edge, but dramatically lower cost? I don't know where the world goes, but it becomes harder when third and fourth players come in, especially given the fact that these have to be partnerships. One company can't do it by themselves.
Okay, Dave, two horse race or not?
You know, interesting question, Jim. This is I think this is going to be a pivotal next couple of years, 2 or 3 years, perhaps, with respect to AI accelerators. Marco and I are, and you folks are as well, I'm sure, Tyrius and Smart Tech, I'm sure you're getting the information coming in from all the hot silicon startups that are in there, in the wings, developing solutions that could be viable alternatives to the GPU. And maybe our AI accelerated future won't be all accelerated by GPUs. There's, you know, guys like NextSilicon doing data flow processors that claim to be far more efficient and as performant. And then there's, you know, a whole RISC-V movement. If you look at the folks at TensTorrent and places like that, there's lots of other chip architecture, instruction set architectures that are just chomping at the bit to take a piece of this AI data center pie. And I think one of them, you know, it's all a combination, as we discussed, of hardware, rack scale solution, and software. But yeah, I don't know, man. I think that you may see another horse, dark horse, coming in from out of the shadows. I don't know.
Okay, Marco, do you agree? And if you do, who's the dark horse?
So I agree, right? Like Dave stole some of my thunder. If your question is laser focused on GPU, yes, it's a two horse race. But I think one area where AMD hasn't said anything yet or hasn't said enough, where even like Intel has made an announcement here, I think there's a move towards mixed environments, like with NVIDIA's recent Rubin CPX announcement having that pre-fill dedicated GPU, and then Intel's recent, I think it's called Crescent Island, I might have that wrong, where they're going to have it like an inference-focused GPU with a big memory pool. AMD hasn't announced anything like that yet. They obviously have the technology, right? They could just rebrand a Radeon, slap a ton of memory on it, but they haven't been talking about that. And I also think that there's so many other potentials other than GPUs. And you know, many, many folks are focused now or are moving towards mixed environments, that there's room for lots of these other chips coming from whoever, Broadcom, Google, Microsoft. So like to answer your question specifically, yeah, I think, you know, AMD is getting far more aggressive and it's going to be a two-horse race for GPU specifically. But moving forward down the line, it may not be a GPU world for AI. There's going to be other accelerators.
Okay, Francis, before I give you the last word, I'm going to comment on that because I agree with you, Marco. We are seeing that diversification of compute between encode and decode. And Rubin CPX is now a decode-type processor, as well as Crescent Island from Intel. And I think eventually, and once again, this really depends on where we are with standards, where we are with learning, where we are with AI. I think we'll see customized solutions eventually, but the market's moving so rapidly that I think right now the GPU is king. So I think for the next couple of years, it pretty much is a two-horse race until things slow down a little bit or we start seeing that customization. What do you think, Francis?
So short story, yes, it's a two-horse race, especially when you're talking about rack scale data centers at this level, right? That being said, and I think you guys are starting to touch on it, I think there is room for a third player. And that third player, how they're going to come in is during that transition of AI workloads becoming so mature that you start coming, it becomes more efficient to not do it in a general purpose platform like a GPU and do it more in whether it's ASICs or some other processing architecture. And I think some of those startups or smaller companies that you're talking about, Dave, won't be able to do it by themselves. They will need to get acquired or partner with somebody like an Intel or a Qualcomm or somebody that has that kind of scale or wherewithal to be able to really take that capability and be that third player in this space, but not in the same way that the first two players are addressing rack scale data centers. Their entry point is once AI starts becoming more mature and you're able to optimize using a different processing architecture. So yeah, there is definitely room there for a third player, but it won't be in that same way.
Well said. Well said, man. Yeah.
Exciting times in our industry. And as we know, AI is continuing to change and drive our industry in new directions. So I want to thank everyone for joining us. Please follow us. You can see our different social networks on the tagline down below. But please also like and subscribe to TechStack and this podcast. If you have any recommendations on future podcasts, please reach out to us. Let us know. We're more than willing to address any other things. And look for some of our technical executive podcasts that we'll be doing and that we are doing going forward. Thank you once again for TechStack.